welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 489. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
And the return of Dan Sullivan.
Hello.
He has been out there on the wall, the E3 wall. Your watch has been long and full of games. How have you been?
Been all right. I'm okay.
That's a very contained weariness that you're exhibiting there, Dan.
I do like sleeping.
Yes, I've read about it in stories. It's been a busy week, and that week is still busying itself along. It's still going on in the background, and I'm sure they'll continue to do mad announcements as we record this bloody episode, so we'll do what we can. But those of you who are subscribed, you listened last week, you heard myself and Matthew chatting up the pre-E3. We were talking about our predictions and the things that had already been announced regarding Stadia and stuff like that. Today, it's going to be the breakdown, the post-E3 examination. So we're going to see what was announced, and that list is insanely large. A lot of Nintendo Switch stuff, obviously, but also a few things on mobile too. Finally, the little Gears of War Funko Pop game. I thought it would never come. We're also going to chat a little bit more about Stadia, because what we thought might be a subscription service is increasingly becoming a multi-tiered subscription service if you actually want to play any developers' games on that service. We'll cover that in a bit. Plus, we also have new releases, including the likes of Sprint RPG, Wild Bullets, Nonstop Night 2, Night Brawl, and more. But first, the news. So we're on the other side of E3 now, finally, and the first thing we'll talk about is, Matthew, your predictions were broadly quite good.
Yeah, I think I did all right, to be fair. Yeah, so Smash Brothers, I got both of them right. I said Erdrick from Dragon Quest would be announced, and it was Hero from Dragon Quest, four different versions of the hero. Basically, it's the protagonist from the Dragon Quest games.
Right, okay.
And one of them is Erdrick, so I was correct.
You can chalk that up. Yeah, that's a success. Yeah,
not
you can
toot my
that.
Own horn we'll or that. Anything. And then the other one, which I still can't believe it happened, is Banjo-Kazooie, which I'm absolutely thrilled. I mean, I was on the verge of tears, I'm not going to lie. It's a dream come true, that, and I can't wait to play him when he arrives in the fall.
I'm excited that you're excited.
Someone has to be.
It's
you know?
Youthful enthusiasm.
It really is.
It's just infectious, isn't it? Yeah.
Nintendo's showing was pretty strong. The other one that we talked about was The Witcher.
Yeah, The Switcher 3.
Yeah, so that's arriving. Did that have a date? I can't remember if that had a date.
I don't know about a date. All it just had was numbers, because we were saying, like, how on earth are they going to do that? And I was saying, like, they're going to have to compress it to a very, very small size to make it work. So it's probably going to look like an 8-bit game. wasn't that far off. So it's going to be running at 540p when played handheld, going up to 720 when docked. So that's how they're going to do it. Basically, Geralt's just going to have two dots and a line for a face.
It's just going to have eyes like a ditto, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Which is fine again. I was saying that maybe it's not the ideal platform or where I would want to play it. But then if that's the only platform you've got, it's another way to play The Witcher 3. It's a brilliant game, so fantastic. More
exactly. It's not the optimum way to play it, but more options are always better. So that's nothing wrong with that.
Even that's going to be 32 gig download.
It's all the DLC as well, which is mad.
Yeah. Mm. It means you'll be able to play The Witcher 3 on the toilet. So there you go.
It's all I've ever wanted, Dan.
That's it. Or in the bath.
Oh. Mm. Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
People do that, don't they? I feel weird about even reading a book, because I can see the pages like gradually starting to wrinkle in the moisture. I'm like, no, this probably isn't good. But I see people dragging laptops into the bathrooms and watching TVs on it. And it's like, I don't know. I think maybe I saw Groundhog Day too much as a kid, and the bit where he kills himself.
I was
going to
say, it sounds like they have a death wish.
Yeah. It's not even that I'm scared I'm going to die. It's that I'm scared the thing that's going to die is the electrical equipment hovering above the water with all the moisture in the air. It's just like, and my laptop's expensive. I don't want to break it.
Yeah, I've definitely been reading a book in the bath and then like kind of half dozed off and had to buy another copy of said book. So yeah, there is danger there. There is danger there.
A little speaker, have a nice man read this book to you, or just get someone in there to read the book to you.
Just have someone, you know, sit next to the bath.
People are quite good at dealing with moisture. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that's it.
E3. That's where we were. So Let's talk about stuff that we haven't covered last week. I'll run through some of the games that got announced. There is a massive article which you should go and check out over on Pocket Gamer, which is our basically massive E3 news roundup. This is what Dan has been updating over the course of the past few days. It continues to grow. We're up to about 25 bullet points at this point in the contents, and it keeps getting bigger because there's loads of stuff. So I'm gonna pull out some stuff at random, and we could talk about it. You can tell us about it, Dan. Stuff that refers to us and mobile Switch things specifically. So Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield is Nintendo's show floor stuff. So that's going to be out there and presumably means people are going to get their hands on it, right?
Yeah, so we've already had a quick peek at the second gym leader.
Yeah,
the water gym leader. And there's also...
Nessie.
Yeah, that's it. And there's also a Corgi Pokemon as well, which is nice.
Adorable.
Yeah. As in a Corgi, like as in a little Corgi dog?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah,
as a Pokemon.
What's he called?
It's called like Yuppa or something. Yuffa?
Doggo.
Right.
Doggo, yeah. I've seen some GIFs rattling around of like there's a like a water bicycle that you can go on to just travel around in the wild area. And that looks pretty cool as well. So
it looks good, okay. Yeah. They showed a bit of the open world sections, and on Nintendo Treehouse we got a bit more detail of it. But I think it's worth bringing up. The big news to come from this is, so do you remember when we talked about Pokemon Home a couple of weeks ago? The new mobile app where you can store all your Pokemon, like Pokemon Bank on 3DS. You can't actually collect all the Pokemon in the newest edition in Sword and Shield. It won't let you transfer Pokemon from previous iterations. I think it's only Let's Go. So there's a bit of uproar in the Pokemon community at the minute.
As in, you can't catch them all?
Pretty much. There's a big meme going around of can catch some of them or something. Like,
oh.
Catch a few of them, all that sort of thing.
It was going to happen at some point, but it was always going to be a shock when it did. And yeah.
It is. To be honest, there's 800 Pokemon. So to spend all that time animating every single one, I think they said it'll take a whole another year to get everything up to scratch. So
we've hit saturation point. Too many Pokemons.
Yeah.
What else have we got here on this massive list? Oh, my friend Pedro, which we talked about a while back, that Devolver Digital's super violent balletic 2D shooter thing. That's got a confirmed release date. So that will now be coming out on Switch. It's June 20th, I think.
They always said it was going to be June, but as we got increasingly closer, it started feeling like one of those dates that were just left there and then they had forgotten about it.
Okay.
But yeah, launching on the 20th of June. Really been looking forward to this game. It first showed up probably maybe about 2 years ago before it signed with Devolver. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just the GIFs that were rattling around on Twitter of the main character just like blasting through windows and kicking the skateboard they were riding into someone's head. Interestingly, actually, the game actually comes from a Flash game that's free to play. It's still rattling around on the internet from about 5-6 years ago. That has the kind of slowdown jumping stuff in it, but...
It is immediately easy to see why the game catches on. It's one of those ones that you watch a video and you go, yes, please, I'll have a go on that.
Thank you.
Sells itself very well through all the stylish violence. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that one. Ukulele's got a sequel. This is the game that sort of was supposed to be a bit Banjo-Kazooie, but not because they didn't have the license or whatever, so they did this instead. People weren't... It did okay, but I think people were a little bit lukewarm on the first game.
Yeah, so I actually played the game start to the end, and I actually backed it on Patreon when it came about. So, first of all, it's such... I love the art style and everything it did with it. It feels like a Banjo-Kazooie sort of thing. It just felt a bit rough. It was like a solid, 7 out of 10. It was enjoyable. I think there was like 5 worlds to explore. 2 of them were fantastic, 2 of them were okay, and I thought one of them was pretty poor. So, take it for what it was, but I'm glad to see it's getting a sequel.
They're changing up the camera angles for it. So
that's what I was going to say, it's gone 2D.
They're doing like an overworld thing.
Yeah, so it kind of switches from like top down to kind of a side on 2.5D. So it's an interesting use of the character, and like Matt said, a lot of people that had problems with the game or their problems with the game was that it didn't quite create a big, vibrant world like it was trying to the first time. So I guess this kind of removes it. It's nice to see the characters carrying on, though.
Yeah, because they actually appeared in it wasn't Brawlhalla, was it? It was like a Smash Brothers clone that came to PlayStation. I can't remember the name of it, but Ukulele appeared in that as well. So they are still popping up now and then, trying to give the IP a bit more leverage and everything.
Well, it's called Ukulele and the Impossible Lair, and we've just got the announcement. We don't have a specific release date for it at the minute, though, so you can keep your eyes out for that one. What else have we got here?
Zelda?
Do Zelda while we're here.
We got two Zeldas. So we got Link's Awakening, a lot more of that shown off.
Which is the remake, remaster thing that they're doing, which does look... The art style is so nice.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
A bit sort of shiny and everything, but it's got that 2.5D slightly top-down, which they've already done with things like A Link Between Worlds, riffing on A Link to the Past, but this is even more polished, even more shiny, almost a little bit tilt-shift in the way that it focuses on the lead character, but... Yeah, it's a lovely thing.
Yeah, it's like claymation, I always think, stuff like that.
A little bit like that, yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, have you seen the amiibo that got announced for it?
No, I don't do amiibo.
you'll still appreciate the amiibo. It's Link, obviously, from the game, but it's his claymation form, and it's the most adorable thing ever. It's just his little eyes looking at you, just like, oh my God, you've got to buy me. So I've purchased 10, yes, that's right.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. Well, to be fair, I know that a bunch of people on staff used to be very, very into the amiibo, and there were lots of, like, I think we had a dedicated window for people swapping them and collecting them and stuff. Nerds! Anyway, so let's do the other Zelda game, which is an actual direct canonical sequel, isn't it?
Yep, Breath of the Wild 2.
Yeah, how about that? How many times has that happened in Link and Zelda mythology? Because very often the new games are... I mean, they're sort of sequels, but they're sort of not. They're all like spiritual successors where they're in slightly different time frames and different worlds. And the Link canon is nuts. Like,
if you try and
look at a flowchart, it makes no sense. But it's almost like they're almost sort of self-contained adventure with different art styles and everything. But that's not this. This is literally a sequel carrying on from the other one. Correct.
Yeah, the Zelda timeline is bonkers, but yeah, this one is a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild. I think the only other time that's happened, so it was Majora's Mask, which is straight on from Ocarina of Time.
Right, okay.
And there is connections to other ones like Twilight Princesses, technically after Ocarina of Time in a diff... it is bonkers, I'm not going to go into it. We're going down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah.
I think actually Link's Awakening and Zelda 2 is straight after Link. Legend of Zelda, the original. And I believe A Link's Awakening is after Zelda 2 as well. So there is some connections, but I think the easiest ones to think of, just Ocarina of Time to Majora's Mask, and then the same with this. And it looks to be the same sort of vibe, you know? This one looks a lot darker.
Because they've only put, like, little bits. There's a teaser that people thought might have been like, oh, is this DLC or something? And they're like, no, it's coming. And it just says Breath of Wild, the sequel to Legend of Zelda Breath of Wild, is now in development. That's kind of it.
When did Breath of the Wild come out? 2017, it was the launch title. This is going to be a full release. I just think it's going to be in the same world. It's going to be literally what Majora's Mask was. They're going to use the same assets. And I actually think it'll be a quicker turnaround than what we think. I can imagine them blowing it out in full next year and then saying we get it released early 2021.
Do people want more of it? Like, absolutely. I haven't played it because of obviously no Switch, and everyone has gone on about how it's, you know, one of the greatest games of the generation, possibly one of the greatest games and open world games ever.
That's because it is.
But I know a lot of people who have done things like they just have, like, wandering around the world and they've avoided killing Ganon at all. They've been playing it for hundreds of hours. Are people going to want to spend another 200 hours in the same world again, just with slightly different quests and missions and stuff?
I can see it. I don't think it'll be the same sort of thing again. Like, Majora's Mask was a bit more linear than Ocarina of Time in some ways. I think it'll focus more on the bit. It might have co-op as well. This is the thing, because if you've seen the trailer, Zelda's there as well. And there's all these rumours that, is Zelda going to be a playable character for once? People have asked Aja Numa, who's the director of Zelda, is Zelda playable? And he said, I can't say. Which, it's a bit of a tease that I feel like he'd just say straight no if not.
Well, there was a lot of discussion about that before this one came out. People were thinking the idea of, like, is there going to be a female Link? Linkle, I think they called him at one point, when they were knocking up all the art. And it turned out, no, that wasn't the case. But perhaps Nintendo have gone, yeah, maybe there is an appetite for this and we should think about making Zelda herself playable.
Yeah, there was actually a female Link, called Linkle, you're right, and that was for Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah.
Oh, it did happen, didn't
it? Yes, they did actually create a form. But I think everyone wants to play a Zelda. You know, they don't want this knockoff Link. I mean, Zelda is obviously, it's the Legend of Zelda, so it'd be cool if, say, at the start of this new Breath of the Wild 2, Ganon, which it looks like's being brought back to life in the trailer, imagine if he captures Link for a change and the whole game is you playing as Zelda.
That would be fun. Would she be sword fighting, do you think? I don't really know her, like, history. If she has to fight, is she a magic user? What's her deal?
Yeah, sort of magic and bow and arrows. So
bow and arrows,
that could work. I mean, we got a lot more of that, obviously, in Breath of the Wild, so it would transition.
I don't recall ever seeing her with a sword, so I'm just wondering, like, what her fighting style is.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what do you think, Dan? Are you excited for this?
I remember Smash Brothers, I think on the GameCube, she could turn into Sheik.
Sheik, yes, that's right.
Who was a dagger wielder.
Oh, so she's a shapeshifter.
No, it's just like trying to explain this now. When she goes and like just leaves the castle, basically, she dresses up as Sheik.
So it's a Princess Jasmine with the hood thing in Aladdin.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I hope that what they do is like a Dark World version of it, because like the core world itself is now heavily explored by a lot of people who've played the first game. They could just keep that map there, but with very little to do in it for the core game, but have that kind of like Dark World entry points that you had in Link to the Past, which for me is kind of peak Zelda.
Yes, I was thinking about that. Link Between Worlds did the same thing halfway through, and I was like, ooh, nice.
Where you just jump through into the other one, and then they could populate the Dark World using the basis of the world that they've already got kind of programmed and set there with new things to do. I mean, the reason I like Link to the Past so much, other than the fact that it was like the first one that I properly played, is because the sparseness of the world was kind of justified in having the Dark World there. Because I know that everybody likes that kind of fantasy forest and woodlands and desert. And it's, I don't know, everybody likes that Link setting. They find Hyrule fantastic. I've always been that person who sits there and goes, why are all these fantasy worlds so empty? Why is there only like four residents in this entire city? And so for me, the Dark World gave that kind of justification. And I feel like the kind of style and mood of the Link to the Past Dark World could make for a great setting for Breath of the Wild 2, especially considering Breath of the Wild, when it was originally teased, was going to be a lot more mature and serious. And you remember the kind of bosses that they showed off that were like these gruesome mechanical things. You know, I feel like they could hone in on that now.
Weren't they the things that appeared in the game still, in the original teaser trailer? It was the, like, octopus creatures.
Oh, yeah, they were, weren't they? Yeah, of course they were. Yeah.
Going the darker route, I think, is something that a lot of people are more excited for. And, you know, everybody that's fans of Majora's Mask has just been going nuts this week with the possibilities from this.
I mean, Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time are always voted, like, some of the greatest games of all time.
Yes.
There's regularly more people voting for it than actually owned Nintendo 64s.
Funny that.
That shift from Ocarina of Time, which was a bright and cheerful world, into Majora's Mask, which had that kind of overbearing pressure due to the
grim time loop death.
Yeah, exactly. I think that kind of a shift with Breath of the Wild 2 would be more than welcome.
Give Switch players another thing to look forward to. Not that they need loads, because there's tons coming. Although, we should probably go back to mobile for just a bit, because there is mobile stuff announced. How about that Gears of War Funko Pop game then?
Let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yay.
So this was announced fucking ages ago. Like, we got some hint at it, like, I think last year's
E3. Yeah, there was like a teaser last year, but it had been talked about before that. But there were no details last year. So that was what made it so weird that Microsoft were like, oh yeah, here's basically one of our biggest IPs other than Halo. And we're working with the Funko people that, you know, every single shop ever in the world has at least one shelf of. Yeah. And see you next year.
Yeah, it has been in soft launch since last year as well.
Has it really? Did it appear?
Yeah,
because they've only shown like the tiniest bit of gameplay at the end of their 20 little
seconds,
trailer.
Yeah.
That's all you get. And it turns out, after all this wait, it's a Clash Royale-style tactical game. That's what it is. And instead of you just like mooching straight up the two corridors either side of the screen, there are chest-high walls put there. So your guys will kind of jump between these walls and then start shooting at folks. And then you'll probably zoom in and do some chainsawing and all the rest of it. But that's what it is. It's a little itty-bitty, soon-to-be, I'm sure, free-to-play tactical Clash Royale game.
I quite like that. I think that's a very good use of that mechanic. And it takes the kind of like cover, huddle forwards thing that was at the heart of Gears of War and adapts that well. There was a game that came out on the Dreamcast, I think it was. I think they launched on PS2 as well a few years ago, many years ago, obviously, actually, called Full Spectrum Warrior.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, and it was a strategy game and you controlled your little squads, but all you did is told the squads where to move to. Mm-hmm. But it made you meant that you had to be very aware that when you were running someone across open ground, they were probably going to get mowed down. So you needed to get the other group on suppressing fire. And I like stuff that forces you to go cover to cover and think tactically. And while I'm sure that there's probably not going to be that degree of tactics in Gears Pop.
No. But it's in many ways, it's quite XCOM-y in the sense that you are just, you know, they're space marines, you small squads of them, and you'll be moving them between cover and you can't just linger about in the open and it'll be turn-based. I don't know if this is actually turn-based or if it looks like it's going in real time and you just kind of, but you have to wait for the timers in order to put the characters out there and move them forward. But in every other way, it's Clash Royale. The only thing I thought was like, Clash Royale kind of hit its peak, like, wow, this is a new thing, and then everyone started copying it.
Yeah.
A good couple of years ago, back maybe when this was announced. So this feels like a very late comer to that genre, which I think has already been rinsed by quite a few other developers, and none of them have really caught on anywhere near as close as Clash Royale have. Perhaps this might work just because it's Gears and Funko Pops and it's two massive brands mashing themselves up. But I'm not even the slightest bit excited, gotta be honest.
No,
I'm
don't think so the Gears of War audience... I don't know who this is for, really.
Yeah.
People like Funko Pops, and I hope I don't know anyone who likes those.
No.
Pointed silence.
There's so many games coming out now that just don't seem to know their target audience. So another one that's further down my list is the Commander Keen game.
Oh, yeah. They've turned it into a weird, like, little mobile platformer kind of that like, looks nothing like the original.
Yeah, looks nothing like the original, doesn't really capture the aesthetic of the original, and all of the people that played the game... when it was out, like, if someone played the game when it launched, which I think was, like, 1992.
Oh, they're all dead now.
then they're all, like, in their, like, let's say mid-30s, or obviously older. And so I don't think they're going to want a version of the game that's been redone up into this Saturday morning cartoon art style and looks quite slow for a platformer. When Commander Keen was quite... although it had the great stuff with the abilities... it was still quite pacey.
We've got The Elder Scrolls Blades doing the jump from mobile to Switch.
Which I feel like we knew that was going to happen, but it's nice to know that it did, because I really don't know how Blades did when it came out. Dave on the site did an amazing amount of guides for it, an absolutely crazy amount of guides for it, and they're all doing great. But... yeah.
My sneaking suspicion is it's making tons and tons of money underneath all the grumbling and all the rest of it that people are doubtless doing. I can't help but think that people are totally spending a lot of money on this. Yeah. The same people who spend a lot of money on free-to-play games in general. Mm. And it'll come to Switch, I'm sure, in free-to-play form as well, and there'll be much grumbling again, and then it will continue to make plenty of money.
Yeah, so it's doing very well. So it generated 1.5 million from player spending in its first month.
Whoa.
Don't know what the drop-off on that is, because first month, I'm interested to see what the tail on it is.
It did well enough that they're still updating it. I mean, and I doubt that this is update content that they had planned that far before launch. So this was a new jewelry pack, a new quest line, and some more customization stuff.
Yeah, there was an issue with loot boxes, wasn't there? Or it was like you couldn't progress any further after a while? Is that right?
You hit that hard limit.
The unlocking time got ridiculous, didn't it?
There's a broad suite. There's lots more. We can't really talk about all of them because there's literally like 25 different things coming. But beyond things like there's a Skywalker saga, the Lego Star Wars, so all 9 films are going to be turned into kind of one game. And this isn't going to be just like a compilation. This is going to be like one game based on all of them. So that's going to be coming to Switch. Those things often turn up on mobile. I don't know if they do as much anymore, but they certainly used to always be ported onto handhelds as well. But go and have a look at this huge article that Dan's done, and it will continue to be updated. The other thing that we need to follow up on is Stadia. So they announced a bunch of stuff before E3 went officially live about how it's going to be a pro version to begin with. You have to have a subscription for $9.99. It'll only be playable on, if you want the HD version, it has to be Chromecast 4K. That's that version of it you have to have. You can't just use a normal Chromecast. And you won't be able to do it through browsers. You'll only be able to do it on mobile through your Pixel 3 or upwards.
Yeah.
You can't run it on any other mobile. And then the free version will come probably sometime next year. But for the minute, it's a kind of pro thing. The additional information that we got, because obviously they talked about it a bunch more, we got demos of Microsoft xCloud running, which is Microsoft's rival streaming service, which is going to allow you to push your games onto your phones. I've seen people doing like latency tests and stuff. I can't remember who did it. It might have been GameSpot or someone.
I think it was...
was it Digital Foundry, maybe? They that do sounds that right. stuff.
X... Yeah.
Well, whoever they are, they did
I'll blurt
the little
it out in a bit. Once
yeah, yeah. They did the little latency comparison test, and apparently xCloud's running a little bit faster, and it's almost, they say, like imperceptible from playing it on your mobile phone using a streaming service to it how it feels playing it on the actual console.
Ars Technica.
Ars Technica. There you go. That's the lot. Well done, then.
Thanks.
And running a little bit faster than Stadia runs when they were doing the tests. Stadia, once again, that's coming in November. So all eyes are on the new streaming services that are going to be announced. And the publishers who are going to be supporting these streaming services with their own subscriptions. So this is what we were talking about last week, where now everyone's going to start releasing their own individual. So Square Enix, they're going to do their own subscription service where you can just pay them a monthly fee and have all the Square Enix games. Ubisoft is doing the same thing. And you just, you know, chuck them £15 as well. So they're £14.99 or $14.99 anyway, service. And you get all of it. This isn't like a Game Pass thing with Microsoft where they give you some of their games. The idea is you just get the entire Ubisoft library. Bosh, there you go. And this is clearly what all the big publishers are going to do. I expect Bethesda to follow suit and, you know, everyone's going to start jumping on this bandwagon. But when it comes to playing them on mobile, Ubisoft, for example, has partnered up with Google Stadia. So they've said that we will also allow our library, our subscription service, to be accessible via Stadia, which means you can technically get all the Ubisoft games once it comes out next year, the Stadia version that will allow you to put it on your iOS device or your Android device. You will also be able to push the Ubisoft games through there too. So you're going to have to pay, if you want the pro version, $9.99 a month for Stadia so that you can play these console games on your phones or your handsets using controllers or otherwise. And then you're going to need to pay £14 or £15 a month to get the Ubisoft games on Google Stadia to play through on your mobile device. And that's just the Ubisoft one. So if you want more of them, you have to start buying subscriptions. And all of a sudden, you're stacking subscription on top of subscription on top of subscription. And that's, as you were talking about before, Dan, not counting your mobile contract that you're already paying to get the mobile device in the first place. And this is an expensive future.
It starts racking up.
It does raise alarm bells to me because it does suddenly feel like if you want to play the games from, like, say, the major publishers, then you're going to be looking at, like, I don't know, £10 to £15 a month each. So what do we got? We've got Square Enix, we've got Ubisoft, we've got Bethesda. Who else can we throw out there?
EA,
the big old publishers.
You said EA?
EA have already got their kind of EA Games Pass running as well.
They haven't done one yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they get on it. And
totally. Take-Two for Rockstar and all their stuff. So suddenly you're looking at, like, you know, maybe say 6 or 7 of the big major publishers. So if you want access to even one of the games on, you know, all of them or a couple of games a month, they release 2 or 3 things a year you're interested in, you still have to subscribe to them. So it's like 6, 7 services, $100 plus a month plus the $10 for Stadia. Like, that doesn't seem workable. So you're going to start having to do the thing where you pick and choose which publishers you like. And suddenly, instead of the console wars, we're going to have the publisher wars.
Yeah, like, unless they all decide to, like, a few of them decide to band together and be, like, share their libraries.
And create the Uber one down the end of the line, which is kind of what Stadia is doing. It is working with partners to allow a bunch of games from different publishers different publishers. But at the beginning, that's going to be like 10 or 20 games. Whereas if you want to sort of complete the set, the thing this feels like to me is we're going to start really siloing ourselves off in terms of the content that we want, just because of like, well, instead of buying a game here or a game here from completely random publishers based entirely on the game, then people are going to start like, well, I can only afford X number of subscriptions. Which publisher do I broadly like the most? I'll choose these two. And then people are just going to be playing like Ubisoft games. In the same way that if you buy, you know, the Disney streaming service and you can't afford another one, your diet is going to mostly consist of Disney. There's already kind of a, you know, brand loyalties that people have. People already know what they're going to get from Rockstar, and they already know what they're going to get from EA. If you're a big EA sports game fan, like, you always buy the next game, buy the next game. But this feels like it's going to really exacerbate it. And it's going to be like, right, which one of these two publishers offers the best value in terms of their back catalog? And it's a weird landscape that they're creating.
It will possibly create a big indie bubble, though, where in the middle, these people who aren't gated behind a publisher are suddenly more visible because all of the other publishers have essentially gated themselves away.
Mm. And you can still, of course, you know, buy the individual game if you want to, but physical sales are kind of nearly dead.
Yeah.
They're sloping so far down as to the point where, you know, you can get to the top of the physical sales charts by not really selling much anymore.
Yeah.
Like a couple of thousand will get you to the number one. And that's mad because everyone is just buying them digitally. And then that's going to be replaced with a subscription. I'm interested to see what happens in terms of the culture, because I really feel like you're going to be immersing yourself particularly in the output of one publisher or another. And take Ubisoft, for example. They make a very specific kind of game.
Yeah. Open world.
There are outliers, and they do other, you know...
Open world.
Not everything... Yeah, not everything is an Assassin's Creed or a Watch Dogs, but they are king of the Far Cry-ish, open world, big map, loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of icons, move down the checklist. That's what they do.
Yeah.
And in the same way that we know what Rockstar do, because they only release a few games, but they are all very much of an ilk. They're from their particular template. Activision's a bit more varied, I suppose.
Yeah, because they pick up all the movie licenses. Like, have they still got the Transformers license?
I feel like
they've got the Transformers license. They did the, because they're Activision Blizzard, they have the Blizzard properties. Mm. And then they've got Call of Duty. And then they'll just release a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. And then the new...
They work with Platinum a lot with that stuff, don't
they? Yes, they do indeed. Yeah. But like, you look at Bethesda, I know a lot of their games are shooting games, but they have a slightly more of a mix than you would see when you look at like Ubisoft.
I'm very interested to see how that affects in-app purchases and stuff like that. So if you're subscribing to a service, right, you're subscribing to an Ubisoft service and you're downloading the latest Watch Dogs, right? So you're playing Watch Dogs 3 through your subscription. Now, if you then buy something within that game economy, because you know that game will probably have some kind of in-app purchase system, because all games do now.
Yep.
Whether it's cosmetic or whether it's actual, you know, gameplay enhancing or speeding up stuff, pay to win things. Either way, if you buy that, if you buy a purchase within the game, are you still going to have to buy things even though you're subscribed to the service? I presume they won't just give it to you all because you're subscribing. And then if you stop subscribing, does that mean that the money that you spent in that game you can no longer access because you can't access the game anymore?
It might be like pre-order, stuff like that. You might get extra bonuses for subscribing.
Yeah, but that, I feel like the free-to-play, or sorry, the in-app purchase economy is more and more important in how games monetize themselves. And will the subscription service sidebar that a bit? Because people are going to get a bit arsey, or at least I would be, if I had to buy additional stuff within the game that I've already technically bought, because I'm streaming it, or I'm subscribed to the service. Technically, I've paid money to get the game. And then suddenly, if I stop that subscription, that means that any money I've gone in there is now inaccessible? It would be like if Netflix also started charging you additional stuff for watching the new movie that came out on the service. If suddenly you had to rent things inside the Netflix subscription, you'd be like, what? This is... No, I'm paying for Netflix to get access to the stuff. This is... What are you doing?
But isn't that like what Disney do, or what they're going to do with like HBO? Because they own HBO as well, and you've got the Disney app. But if you want HBO, you have to pay for that as well, extra.
But they kind of treat those as separate subscriptions. And I think they're going to be different types of content as well. I think Disney's going to be the more kiddie version. And then the... it's not HBO, it's Hulu.
Hulu, sorry,
Hulu's
yes.
going to be the more, like, serious drama stuff. I feel that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, it's just a lot simpler, isn't it, in television when you outlay like that. There's just so many more levels to video games that I don't think is clear at the moment.
I don't know. It's just, I'm not sure I'm down with this. This never owning everything, endless tiers of subscription services upon subscription services that require the previous subscription to get to the next subscription. It just, this all sounds very expensive and never ending. And it gives me the heebie-jeebies.
To be honest, digital is still a bit weird.
You're still not down with downloading games,
yeah,
full stop.
Yeah, I know. As someone who worked in like retail stores for like a decade, still pretty weird about how people were just like, no, I won't get it in the shop for $39.99 and I can trade it in later for like £22. What I'm going to do is go home and spend $49.99 in a completely closed marketplace and purchase it directly from the manufacturer.
I can never give it to anyone else.
Yeah, that's it. So,
yeah. Tell you what's a good game. Hoop and Ball.
Yeah.
You get a ball,
noughts
you throw
and
it through a hoop.
Yeah,
that's like that one. That's good as well.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've only heard of these. These are like myths to me, these games.
I know. You see them in movies about world wars.
Yeah, sometimes we just run our hands over the candles, yeah.
Can I just say, I don't know how we haven't done this yet, but how has nobody mentioned Keanu Reeves yet?
Yeah, well,
it's nothing to
I guess that, well, it's tied up in a game that's not really relevant to us, because it's, yes, Keanu Reeves came out and everyone got very excited because he is the only pure soul left in the world.
I am looking forward to Keanu Reeves releasing on platforms.
Yeah, I will
what
take.
Was the name of the game?
I will download Keanu Reeves straight onto my. I'll pay the Keanu subscription service. I'm fine. Just keep it coming. But yeah, because of Cyberpunk 2077 and he's going to be a character in that. And so he came out.
It's a very cool moment. Yeah. I think the best thing about it is he's now in a game. So that means he's eligible for Smash Brothers.
Yes, I saw people discussing that. Yeah. Everything comes back to Smash Brothers, is you. That's
it does. It does.
It does.
I don't have a problem.
No.
Extremely circular. Well, it's fine. You get halfway through Cyberpunk 2077 and he just looks at the screen and then just green numbers start falling down the screen and it's actually The Matrix 4. And it was all a big...
That's a twist.
I think they would be slightly more sensitive about handling the trans issue stuff.
That's very true, yes. Good shout.
If it was, in fact, The Matrix.
Good shout, yes.
4. But yeah, unfortunately, that's not our area because unless they announce it's coming to Switch, which it probably isn't initially... Maybe we'll get to talk about Cyberpunk.
Maybe it'll stream on Stadia or something. That technically falls onto
possibly
our remit now.
But in the meantime, do come back to PG and keep seeing it because we're, you know, there's still way more stuff to go up and we've got all your E3 mobile focused content right here. Come and check it out. Out and about this week. Appreciate this is a longer one because of E3, but we're going to power through these. So, Sprint RPG, which is a new Night Trim game, which always gets me excited because I like Night Trim stuff. This is quite an unusual take. So, remember those early 90s RPGs, which were first-person perspective, but you would advance by clicking the forward button and it would like jump forward a screen at a time.
Oh,
remember those?
Like Wizardry and stuff. The little dungeon crawlers. Yeah, I remember those.
There was an Eye of the Beholder game that existed on Amiga that I used to play, click, 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 and then turn left, click, 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 single screen. Lovely. It's taking that concept and then turning it into a almost like speed running thing. So it's presented in very, very lo-fi, 8-bit, almost original Game Boy monochrome. And you're going down the corridor and you've got forward, back, left and right, or maybe even just forward. And you've got an attack button and a shield button. And what this is, it's all about working out the exact perfect combination of button presses. So you tap to go forward, dip, 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 and then maybe you'll see in the distance when you tap forward a frame, a little enemy, a floating bat. Tap again and bam, they'll be right in front of you. If you tap once more, you'll hit into the enemy and your little timer limit will go down because you are being timed to reach the end of this dungeon. So you then need to take him out. So you hit the attack button, bleh, kills it in one shot. You keep tapping forward. Can't do a corner, need to turn right or left or whatever, and you do that. If you hit forward again accidentally, you'll hit the wall, and again, your time will go down a little bit. So you need to judge it perfectly. You come up against another enemy, hit them once, they don't die. You need to hit them again. Bam, that's a two-hitter. Remember what that enemy looked like. Forward, forward, forward. There's a little chest. It's got treasure in. Hit it to open it. Move on, move on. You get another beastie that pops up. You hit it, and it suddenly jumps backwards in the frame. So you have to go forward again, hit it once more, then it dies. So you're doing all this at 1,000 miles an hour. Because like, and what you're trying to do is commit. I know this enemy needs one hit. I know this enemy needs two hits, or one hit, move forward, then another hit. I know this enemy needs to be hit, then he hits me, so I need to hit the shield, then I hit it back, then it dies, then you can move on. And it's about executing this stuff as quickly and as perfectly as possible. Because every time you make an accidental button press, every time you tap one screen too far and bump into the enemy, you're losing time. Or if you hit the corner of a wall instead of turning left or right, you lose time. And obviously, if they hit you and mess you up, you lose time. It's tough, and it gets tough quick. It's really satisfying, though. Because when you get into the flow, it's that thing where your fingers are almost acting before you're thinking it.
Mm.
Really good fun. It's ad-supported, but you can get rid of the ads, as they always do on Nitrome Games. Doing a video for it at the moment, and I would recommend taking a look at it. It might be a bit niche. I think people will pick it up, play like 30 seconds ago. Nah. But stick with it. I really think it's dead cool, and anything Nitrome does is generally worth looking at. Full name is Sprint RPG. Do go and check that one out. What else we got?
That sounds really cool. It's not out. It's not out on Android. I just literally looked it up for your description, and I was like, "It's not."
Sorry,
here.
No, it's iOS only at the minute. But they generally come. Nitrome stuff does make it over generally to Android soon afterwards. So don't worry. We've got another little retro thing called. It's not called The Town. What is it? Wild Bullets is the name of it. And this is a top-down 2D arcade game. This is more like a 16-bit affair. And the idea is you're moving your cowboy character up and down a grid. There are single screen chunks of levels, and you have to clear that single screen, and then you move to the top and it kind of bloop, scrolls down. You've got another single screen, and you know, a level will consist of maybe two or three of these glued together.
Oh, I actually played a little bit of this.
Oh, did you? Okay, cool. So what did you think of this one?
It was fun. It maybe needs a bit more variety. It just seems, obviously, it's the same mechanic going over and over. You obviously just, you're moving along, you're shooting your enemies, and you're going to the next screen over and over. I don't know. I only played probably about half hour. It didn't really grab me.
No, I know what you mean. It is a bit repetitive. The thing that's the novel stuff about it is the movement mechanics are also the combat mechanics. So instead of just a forward button moving you forward, if you press forward, you jump a tile forward, but you punch.
Mm.
So your forward button is also your attack, and your back button, if you want to move down the screen, is also your shoot. So the idea is that he's firing his gun and the recoil is pushing him back a tile. So that's a kind of novel thing. So every time you attack at range, every time you fire your gun, you're going to move backwards. And you've got to like factor that in to the environment and make sure you're not smashing into something behind you or whatever. So that's quite cool. And the enemies have fairly predictable attack patterns. So it's about, you know, choosing the right moment to jump into their line of fire, unleash a couple of bullets, and then dodge back before they shoot. And then there are shops placed halfway through, and you can go in there and buy upgrades and bits and bobs. I was a bit like, that's a novel mechanic. I like the shooty movement thing. Beyond that, it is a bit repetitive, and I wasn't as sold with this as I was with initially something like Sprint RPG, which I really dialed into quick.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's free to play or not. Is it free to play?
I believe it's free to play, yes.
Okay.
It doesn't utilize the mechanics to its full potential, I feel like.
You would like to see more done with it.
I feel like, yeah, there's a lot more, maybe, I don't know, puzzle aspects or something they could do with the, obviously, punch forward, shoot back sort of thing.
That bit at least was novel, but I think we'll do some kind of video of it. I'll probably just do a hands-on. But that's out on iOS. I think it's Android as well, but double-check that right now, and I believe that is free. So Wild Bullets is the name of that one. What else do we have? Yeah, Nonstop Night 2. So Nonstop Night was really quite popular, and I believe made a ton of cash. And this is one of those things that sort of slightly escapes me, because this is one of those RPGs that basically plays itself.
They were like the early idle clickers, weren't they? Where you didn't actually do much clicking. You just kind of calibrated your characters every so often, and then they went on for a bit longer until it was too hard, and then you calibrated them again.
Was it like that? It is. There is some involvement. So the idea is that it's an isometric style view, cartoony graphics. You're charging through dungeons and all the running and the attacking happens automatically. So the AI is just controlling your character, running between enemies and smashing them up. There are additional like bonus attacks you can do that are at the bottom of the screen. So there's like three different attacks. At least initially you gain three over the course of the first half an hour or something. And you can do like a jump attack, you do a little tornado attack, and one which is a ranged thing where you blast a shockwave. And you can press those if you're actually sort of looking at the game and playing it. You can, you know, speed up your process, your journey through the game just by smashing up enemies with these specials. And then you can call in a boss. Once you've hit a certain number of enemies, the boss button appears. You can tap the boss button and then fight the boss. Again, you can just sort of sit back and watch them do it, or you can get involved if you're actively playing by using these special moves. I think that just speeds up your process, but the major aspect of it is the fact that you can sort of pick it up and put it down and just leave it going, and then pick it up again when you're bored and press a few buttons and then ignore it. There is apparently a huge market for this stuff, which it's not for me. I've never quite got it. Glenn, a person used to be editor of the site, and he is also dead. He died at the same time. They're in the same car, him and Rick. And they are, Jesus. If they die in a car accident, I will feel bad. They're fine. Glenn was well into these things. He thought this stuff was great. And I never quite got it, because I just like, if I'm going to bother turning a game on, I'd quite like to play it. But I don't want that to sound snobby, because it does sound a bit snobby. I understand that there are people who like get a... I guess it's a relaxing way to play.
Yeah, I get that from these sort of things. Yeah, I understand.
Probably like gaming ASMR.
Yeah, it's sort of as well. It's an easy sort of thing you can just switch your mind off for. You know, you can have a TV show running in the background and you can just plod on.
Yeah, yeah. And the great thing about gaming and all this stuff is that it's an incredibly broad medium, and we can cater to all the different niches. And so if it is your thing, then more power to you. Looks nice. It's doing the same thing the first one did, as far as I can tell. And if you like that kind of thing, go for it, I guess. So Nonstop Night 2, that's out right now. Another one, actually, last one I played, Night Brawl. This is funny because this is from Colin Lane. And Colin Lane is the indie dev who does lots of golf-themed stuff, generally. He likes his, Zero Golf was a very good game of his, but he started off with Wrestling and those kind of physics brawlers games where you can't really control the moves properly. I don't know if either of you have played any of these, but...
Heard of Wrestling.
Yeah, it's kind of like you move left and right, and then there's a button where they just like rotate their arms in this crazy way. And it's like they're weebles, they're kind of jumping and wobbling, and you just have to sort of smash them into each other. It's not like, you know, refined combat, it's very chaotic, and that's the whole point. It's supposed to be goofy and fun. And he's done a version where it's a little bit more, a lot more zoomed out. It looks much more like a kind of 16-bit platformer, but he's doing it with kind of knights. So you've got people in, you initially start out with like a saucepan on your head, but and a barrel as armor. But the idea is you're able to get more armor as you go through and upgrade your sword and things, and then you fight through a career mode where you get pitted against increasingly more violent and dangerous enemies. Or I think you just go into some like brawly rumble thing where you just keep going and going. It's all very small on the screen, even though it has the same mechanics. It doesn't have quite the same like chaotic energy, I don't think, as Wrestling. And he did a wrestling game previously, which is similar. It's not my favorite of his. I think it feels a little bit less... I think it's like a smidge less personality for some reason compared to the other ones. But it's still perhaps worth a look if you like his particular version of mad physics fighting nonsense. Then, you know, he does this stuff very well alongside the golf obsession, which is also good. Golf Zero still remains a phenomenal game. You should go and have a look at that as well. So that's out at the minute. I've just forgotten the name of it because I closed my phone. Night Brawl is the name. That'll do, I think. we've probably already hit the over an hour mark. But thank you all for listening. We're going to continue to cover E3 as stuff continues to filter out of it. And we will be back next week, hopefully with a full house again, for more chatter. Thank you, gents, as always, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. You were breathtaking.
Thank you all for listening, by the way. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.